Welcome to episode 38 of the David Binkowski Podcast. Today, my guest, senior data analyst from Sports Grid, Arturo Gaetti, and we're talking NBA, best teams, worst teams, playoffs, and MVP. Let's get to it. Arturo, welcome back to the podcast. We've got a ton of stuff to go through. You brought some amazing data that I want to run through with you. Tell me what I'm looking at right here.
So team four page on that one. Yeah. Right now I've got it set to Atlanta. That shows, using the 538 depth, who their guys are. And it shows their like their stats from different stats and then a player percentile based on that. So I've got kind of a blended point margin estimate. The point margin, which is what I do, Raptor, which is ESPN, Darko, which is one of the, measurement for like one of the geek measurements, and Rapam is another one of the geek measurements. So these are all like public measures, and then kind of come up with like a number for the impact for that particular player. Generally, if you want a good team, right, a team that's a contender, you want to look at it and see, oh, look at all that green for Boston, yeah, right? Everybody on their top level for Boston. The worst player right now in their top six, at least for the season, is Al Horford. But we've talked about veterans in the playoffs, so Horford will probably be moving a lot freer when the playoffs come around. So really, and then you go look at the guys who are on their bench. You know, Derek White's probably their seventh guy, and he's really good. And then you got Muscala, who's actually like, I've got Muscala as a 66.3. But Muscala, if you look at the way he plays, he's a really good three-point shooter. And it's one of these guys, like, because he's big, like, certain teams don't have him take that many threes. But the Celtics have brought him in and just said, like, no, take as many threes as fucking can, because, you know, he's a dude who can stretch out the floor. They like, the Celtics really actually like, have always liked having a big who can stretch out the floor by taking out threes. And so they'll bring him in, like, he'll be more valuable for the Celtics because, one, I mean, he gives them backup for Al, but he can come in and take five, like Muscala's a guy who can win you a playoff game by making, like, eight threes in a game, right? It'll happen. Like, one game, like, oh, shit. And he'll make, like, eight threes and a half, and, like, that'll take the other team out of the game, right? And he won't win you every game, but he is a valuable piece to have. And so, like, same with, like, Luke Cornett and whatnot. Like, so if I look at, say, another team I consider a contender, let's look at Denver, right? Same deal. Like, Denver's problem is, like, they've got, right now, is Jeff Green's in that rotation. Probably Bruce Brown should be. And their depth is kind of shit. It's the same problem Denver's always had, where, like, if anybody on that team gets hurt, then you're getting into, like, shitty. You're getting into shitty. Well, no, I mean, the Denver problem. We're recording, so this is good. So the Denver problem for the playoffs. Denver is a team that is very top heavy, and everybody on that team, the top six on that team is healthy. That team is very good. But if Jamal Murray gets hurt, or Gordon gets hurt, or Porter gets hurt, you get into a situation where, like, teams can basically cheat. Like, basically, teams can just say, we're going to bump the shit out of Jokic, and we're going to block his passing. This is what the Suns and other teams have done to him. So effectively, but there isn't anybody else to take the pressure off to drive towards the hoop. So he gets stuck in these situations where he's playing with, like, below average guards. And really, you know, one of the things for Jokic is an all-world passer. So if he has guys around him that can cut towards the hoop and make the bucket, right, or, like, go out and, like, are offensive threats, then it's a bit like the Dirk situation, where, like, if you collapse on Jokic, he's going to murder you because he's such a fucking great passer. Right. But if there's nobody to pass to, then it becomes, like, a real situation against, like, elite defenses, right? So, like, this is Denver. Denver is a bit like Denver's what we call a glass cannon, like, in the sense of, like, they're really, really good if they're all healthy. But it's been a problem for them to keep everyone healthy on the court at the same time. And if they're not, they don't really have a lot of depth to kind of respond to that. Mm-hmm. If that kind of makes sense.
I thought, what did you think? I have a thought on, so they got Thomas Bryant at the deadline, at the trade deadline. And I know I hate it, but he's not even remotely close to what Jokic can do. So I thought they should go after Mason Plumlee, quite frankly. He's a better passer. And he's not Jokic, but he's like a C-minus version of Jokic. Where that's at least plays in the same style of how the rest of the team would play if Jokic were in the game. I just thought Bryant is limited in what he can do, I think. So I thought...
Where did Plumlee wind up?
Clippers.
The Clippers are really interesting. Yeah, the Clippers kind of made themselves worse. And as much as I like, let's get into it. So the Clippers' strategy was they've needed to get some guards. So they went out and got Bones Island. They got Russell Westbrook. Here's the problem with that. And I trust their coach, but the problem is, I've always argued that Russell Westbrook is the rich man's Allen Iverson. And the same way as Allen Iverson, it's very similar that like his game relies a lot on his physical ability and his physical. It's more of a, I'm very skilled physically. I'm faster than you. I'll jump higher than you. And effectively, when his game went, it was going to go fast, right? Because his level, his margin. Once he falls below that margin, he can't do certain things. And it isn't like he's not a guy who's going to have like old man game like say Chris Paul. Who can kind of like Chris Paul's not hasn't been the guy he was like early in his career for like 5 years, but he's still got like the chops to do that. Westbrook still wants to try to do that, and then like he kind of makes things worse. And
he's like, if I tried to play, and so my son was a Westbrook fan. He wore a number 0 his senior year in high school. Westbrook's game then was still good. But I said to my son, like, that game is so dependent on athleticism. Like, even his jumper, he's jumping, he's clearing almost 18 inches on his fucking jumper. And it's like, that's not sustainable. Like, I remember I had Frank Garza on, and he was saying that his teammates used to tease him all the time because he wouldn't jump. Like, he's like, I refuse to jump. I refuse to dunk. He goes, but now I'm in my 50s. My knees and my back feel great. And my old teammates are all a bunch of broken down old men. And that's how I feel about Westbrook. Like athleticism only has a certain duration, or time.
Well, we've talked about athleticism in the playoff rondo, right? So I do think that Russ might have real value in the playoffs, at least for 2 weeks, which is how long those cortisone shots last when you take them. You can take them, they free up, they make you feel better for 2 weeks, but then you can't double dip on, you shouldn't double dip on the cortisone shots, right? I've read a little, like, anybody who's interested in that, I would say, like, Google Dr. Feelgood if you want. Dr. Feelgood, Roger Maris, and Mickey Mantle. He was the, this is an old hat for guys who have problematic knees and whatnot, problematic joints. You can take cortisone shots, will basically reduce the swelling and let you kind of move around much freer. But the cost is, swelling is there to protect the joints, so when it wears off, it comes back harder. So if these guys play really well for 2 weeks and then
fall off,
they fall off or get like more likely to get hurt. You also increase your likelihood of getting hurt, Kevin Durant. Sorry, I don't know what that was. When you take these shortcuts to actually get on the court, when your body's like, you're structurally not ready to get on the court, but you're taking shortcuts to get there by using medicine, there is increased injury risk, right? So I do think, look, Kawhi Leonard is still a guy who, if he's playing on top of his game, is great. Ty Lue is great. But I don't know about the Clippers, right? Like, the problem is, it's I feel like they went away from what I would have gone into. And Westbrook's like, they went for Westbrook and Highland, and I think that was the wrong. Although playing Westbrook Highland could work if they can actually move. But it was a weird way to go, and it's not necessarily that I would have gone more for role player. I would have gone more for, like, fill out the depth on that team. And just kind of, like, because here's the thing. Fill out the depth Clippers basically made it to the Western Conference Finals a couple years ago, right? With, like, no stars. So I think, like, I would have gone to, like, give Lou pieces that he can work with, as opposed to, like, I mean, apparently the players kind of forced it, but
everything I've listened to and read says Paul George was forcing this, and that Kawhi was on board as well. I wouldn't trust the player who's disappeared in the playoffs, playoff P, all that stuff, and he's still at a high level. He's great, but I would not let any player dictate if I'm the general manager. That's your job. Like, that's
the easiest cheat for knowing if a team can win the title is? It's very easy, actually.
Road record? I don't know. I've seen the stats about top 10 defense, top 10 offense, all that stuff, but
52 wins.
Yeah.
You got to have 52 wins. I believe the last team not to win 52 games in an 82-game season and win the title was the Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going on 30 years ago.
That's a long time ago, yeah.
Like, makes you feel old when you think about it. Like, yeah, it's a long time ago. Like, it's the Rockets, and then before that, it's like the Seattle Supersonics in the 70s, right? Yeah. So typically, there's a couple things at play there. It's typically the team who's been great the entire season, one, and two, it's really hard to win a bunch of road series.
Right.
It's particularly, like, if you do the statistical analysis, what happens with the game, so the way the NBA playoffs are set up, because it's like 200 possessions, and it's seven games, and it's home away, I've got these like pretty graphs I've done, but the analysis basically says that the better team wins most of the time in these playoff series.
Yeah.
Like the team who's worse can win, but like typically because it's a large sample, right?
Yeah.
So the team that is physically better is more likely to win because it is a very large sample, and a large sample with a lot of data points is going to tend towards the true mean. This is like it's called the law of big numbers, right? So effectively, it's really hard to win all these road playoff series, even if you are better. You still have to go on the road and beat a team that like either is comparable or better to you. And there are other structural issues, and then you have to go through it like series by series by series by series. To the point being that realistically, if you look at it, right? So the magical number, hold on, it's 52 wins divided by 82, which is about 60%, right? So 60% winning percentage. So you can look at that and say, like, use that as a proxy and say, hey, who are the actual contenders right now? So really, at the top layer, you got three teams in the East, Celtics, Bucks, and Sixers. And I do not take the Sixers seriously at all. And we'll get into that. The Cavaliers are kind of like around, but yeah, I don't think they're a serious contender this year. And then like one team in the West right now is over that 52 win hump. It's the Nuggets. And realistically, those are the four teams you're kind of looking at. And I mean, one of the other teams might bubble up. I like the T-Wolves. We can talk about that too. Why I like T-Wolves. And I like a couple of the other teams that kind of like made some. I like the Grizzlies. I think the Suns, if they're healthy, can kind of make a run at it. But they're another glass cannon team like the Nuggets in that. Let's talk about the Suns, right? Yeah. So the Suns traded.
Before we do that, I am a little bit. The sheet that we're looking at shows Mason Plumlee at 71 out of 100, I believe, is about C-. So I was pretty close on that, I guess.
Yeah, he's like, the way to view it is think about it as percentiles, right? So if somebody, there's about 15 players per team, 30 teams in the NBA, so 450 players, right? So if somebody is 90% or better, they're top 45 guy, right? Yeah. If they're 95% or better, they're like a top 20 guy, right? And if they're 99, so they're like in the top five, right? So like it's a top five guys, the way to think about it. And really what you want to say is you want your top six, your playoff rotation, your five best guys and your six and seven guy to be in that top, you know, ideally top 10, top 15 percentile, right? So guys who are like in the top 100. And then you want your top guys to have, you want to have guys who are top five, top 20, right? Because that kind of means that on the court, you're putting out like a bunch of guys who are really fucking good.
Yep.
Now, what the Suns did, if you look at the second tab, which is the trade report, the Suns traded four quarters for a dollar, effectively, right? Because they traded guys who are like, you know, top, you know, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, rayed out as top 50, top, like, you know, really good, useful players were valuable. Like some of that is being in the system, but these are guys who are like, you know, good pieces. Crowder is even a good piece. Dario Saric is a decent death piece. So they traded guys who were playable for obviously Kevin Durant. He's like tippy top five guy. And with the understanding that if they have Kevin Durant, Booker, and Paul, yeah, they can contend. And they got a couple, like, you know, they got a Colin Payne and Damian Lee. If they can figure out their rotation, they do actually have a decent kind of top. The vibes still there in that team are kind of fucked. I don't necessarily trust them to stay healthy.
Right. That's the biggest
but
issue.
But Kevin
Durant, if Durant goes down, the fuck, they mortgage everything for nothing if he goes out, essentially.
Well, yeah, but it comes back to like I mean, people forget that that Nets team was a missed Durant shot from going probably winning the title, right? Yeah. So, and really, it wasn't, he didn't even be a miss. He just stepped on the line, right? His foot was too long. He stepped on the line. This is why they didn't make the, they probably didn't win the title because of that. And he was the best player. This is like, you know, as recently, what, 2 years ago? He was the best player in the world. And so, I mean, I get going all in on Durant. It's a positive move for them. I understand it if they're healthy. But I do think that they do have to get healthy enough so they can actually kind of like make it through that. So I think they're like, what, they're 32 and 28. They've got, you know, 22 games left, right? So is it 22 games? Yeah, it's Jesus, yep. 22 games. So they really need to go on a tear here to kind of like to get into a spot where, like, you know, they're top two teams. And even like the history doesn't argue for it. It's very like, you know, teams have like made it, but making a trade and winning in the middle of the season is actually really fucking hard. It's like almost no one, you can make the finals. I'm thinking to the Rasheed Wallace trade and whatnot, but it's very, very rare to get to that position.
And the last time, I mean, these type of trades are rare, number one, and the fact that that it rarely ever leads to a championship, you know, is this just new owner, right, wanting to make his stamp?
Well, I mean, I think part of it is that, I come back to that, like the four quarters for a dollar, right? The problem is when you're making these blockbuster trades for a star, you have to trade a bunch of shit to get there, right? And you're trading useful players, and it gets into like, you know, as much as the NBA is a top heavy league, you still need to have, you still need to roll out a decent enough rotation so you don't get up blown off the court in a playoff series, right? You still need to, that top six, you can't be losing 15 minutes a night against like, you know, like the Celtics or the Nuggets or the, like, these things. Like, if you do not see, or like even the, you're playing Memphis and Memphis is blowing you off the court. Memphis has the depth to blow you off the court for 10 minutes, right? A night. And if you do not have the depth to do that because you can't keep guys on the floor for 45 minutes, then that is a problem. So you need to have enough so that, like, when you do actually have to, like, give your guys rest, you have enough so you don't get blown off the court by the second unit of these teams. Like, teams like, so this is why, I mean, you don't care about who number 15 is, but you definitely do care about who number 6 and number 7 is. So I think this is where the depth piece for Phoenix becomes an issue. And again, I said Denver was a glass cannon. The Suns are even more of a glass cannon in the sense that, like, they're much weaker depth-wise than, like, some of the other teams. Like, their top is very heavy. They have three guys who are elite, 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 right? I mean, depends on how much you trust Chris Paul. But again, I think the thing with Chris Paul is Chris Paul last year got beat because the Dallas, and I don't, have you seen that article about how Dallas beat Chris Paul? Basically, they basically bumped him on every possession. They basically just put contact on him on every possession and blocked out his lane. And like the Suns couldn't get past. He just kept bumping and kept bumping and kept bumping. And they didn't have enough backup to actually get on that. And it works. I mean, it's a good, it's a one trick thing, but it worked because it took him out of his game and there's nobody else to step up. Really,
that's the ultimate coaching, the ultimate strategy in basketball or any sport, but especially in basketball. If I know you can't go left, I'm going to fucking plant my defensive stance right inside your right hand and force you to go left. Right. This is the, we talked about this. This is Alvarado. He exposed,
you know, it's
the thing that will shut down Chris Paul. And especially now that he's older, I can't imagine it's going to get any better. So I'm glad.
It's funny. Durant, when I was in college, I used to go out and play. There's a pickup court in like school. And this was, I was at Harvard. So it's like, I was doing, but like the guys would show up for grad school that we'd get NCAA X. We'd get Division I guys showing up on the pickup game. Right. So these are guys who played Division I ball, who were in grad school at Harvard, right? And were showing up to play at the pickup court. So what I'm saying like, you know, 6'3", 6'4", guards who were playing at, I don't know, DePaul or something. But dude, if a guy was starting at like Division I, you've been on the court with guys like, they're like insane. So the way I would be able to hang on the court was I would say, look, I mean, I'm like 6'3", I'm, you know, but I was fairly athletic because at the time I was playing water polo and whatnot. I was like, I had good cardio, very good cardio because I was doing water polo and swimming at the college level. So like, while I wasn't the best basketball player in the world, I could run up and down the court like a crazy person for like 2 hours without like getting gassed. So, and I was like, you know, I'm also burly, so I could bump the shit out of people. So what I would do is I would figure out, like, if I have to guard one of these guys played the one ball, is I would figure out which way he went, right? If I could see that the guy only went to his right, I was like, don't worry, I got him. Because effectively what I could do is I could just take away his right hand. I just cheat like a motherfucker and bump him. I basically like cheat like a motherfucker, just get ahead of his right hand and try to force him left every single time because he couldn't do that and he would fuck up. And again, also there were other Div 1 guys playing with us. So like, yeah, if I could basically get him to fuck up his footwork or fuck up his dribble, then somebody behind him could pick up. He's going the way he doesn't want to, or he's backing up. And then it's like when you get Gobert going if you get Gobert dribbling the ball in the hop, same thing. Like, it's a big guy. You're trying to get him to like dribble the ball in the hop because he's not comfortable with that. If you're playing a guy who's 6'8", he's getting above you, then you're fucked. But what you want to do is you want to pick him up high and try to force him. Like, again, if you run into a guy who basically can go both ways and he played, like, you're like, dude, what the fuck are you doing in a pickup court? If you, like, why are you here? Right. What?
I always play it. If I'm playing against somebody who's bigger than me, which does happen, I'm 6'6", but so it does happen. It was always to get up into him. It was to never let him catch the ball clean.
Yeah, yeah.
Never let him make his move clean. Like, he's getting bumped. I'm defending, you know, taking
both elbows on his hips.
Yep.
Yeah, both elbows.
Or if I have a teammate who knows I actually play defense, then they're either going to drop down. If the wing pass is the entry pass, then they'll drop in and help double. And then just recover once he kicks it out if he's not comfortable trying to, you know, to move. There's always a counter. And that's one of the things, reasons I love playing so much and why I love the game is because if you're a student of the game, you don't have to be the most athletic in the world or the best player. But if you know the game, then you can play. And that's why, you know, that's the thing that's shocking to me about Chris Paul is that something is small and one thing, which is just bump him, get up on him and he takes away what he wants to do.
The entire team did that, and the reason it worked is because Chris Paul doesn't have the first step he used to, right?
Can't get by.
So, yeah. But
normal, in effect,
it's only going to work if you have the person. Like, it's not going to work in a regular sport. Like, it's actually the same thing. Like, this is the way I would play Russell Westbrook now. Is basically I would bump the shit out of him and like rely on he does not have the first step to get past you like he used to. Like again, he might for a series. But like he might for like part of a series, but he's not going to have it for every night. And even if he does, what you do want to do is you want to put wear and tear on him by bumping him so he doesn't have it for a long time.
Yeah.
So effectively, it is the right way. This is like the argument I always have with people about like refereeing. It's like, oh no, I'm like, oh, you have conspiracy. But like, look, the refs basically determine a lot in the game. It's like, oh, but the foul counts. It's like, dude. You can't pay attention to the free throw counts when you're looking at how the way a referee impacts the game. Because the way a referee impacts a game is like, if we're playing a playoff game and the referee is letting one team bump the shit out of the other team and put their hands on the other team in the post without calling it, right? So that means they can get even further in on defense. Like, say if you're playing Toronto and the referee is letting Toronto get in on your face and bump the shit out of you on defense, Toronto's going to lean into that. And if they're playing Toronto playing Boston, and if Boston's going to try it, and Boston gets sticky tack foul every time they get a hand on, Boston's a smart defensive team. They're going to back up and cover the way they can't cover because they don't want to put you on the line. But that means you're going to have like 6 inches of extra space to blow by them. And it's going to make a huge difference on whether you can actually get shots at the rim. Like, one team's going to get shots at the rim. The other team's not going to be able to get anything at the rim because every time they go to the rim, somebody's getting like murdered. Yeah. So that's how referees affect the game. It's not the free throws. You have to pay attention to like, what is being called, right? So, and again, smart teams. Like, if I'm playing, you know, I play pro-ams, like, 10, 15, like, if I'm playing and I can get up, like, you're talking, like, I'm playing a tall guy, and, like, the ref is letting me get away with putting, like, shoulders on his hips. You know what I mean? Like, not shoulders, like shoulders on his back and, like, elbows on his hips. So, basically, I can keep him out of the box. If I can do that, so effectively, he's off balance when he's turning, and the ref is letting me do that, I'm going to fucking do that. Like, same thing. It's like, you know, I'm taking away your left hand and I can bump and I can basically bump you off with one hand. Then of course I'm going to fucking do it, right? Why wouldn't I do it? Because I'm letting it, like, if I get whistled at it, then I'm fucked. I basically have to step up and figure out another way to do it. But that's kind of the trick on that. And people, and again, it's how you watch these games. It's like, you have to watch that. You have to watch, people kind of like are also very simplistic on defense. You have to watch like the guy on point, the guy who's covering the rim, the guy who's helping. Right. And the guys were like, that's kind of, you have to think about that line from the ball to the hoop. You have to think about how people are covering and you have to think about the contact they're being they're like, if you can't bump or you can't get up because like the ref is letting you, like if the ref decides to give the offense space, then you're kind of fucked. Yeah. Right. If they're giving space on one side and they're not giving any space on the other, then that makes a huge difference in the way these games are called. And you can actually see these like in some of these game files, and you start looking and go like, oh fuck. You're like, you've got money on one side, and then one time you're like, oh shit. Like this is gonna go badly because this is the way the game is being called at the moment.
I play basketball here still. Tell myself why sometimes, but I play here. I'm normally the biggest person on the court, and I cannot move. I'll get double teamed on every rebound. I get bumped when I catch the ball on offense. There's immediately a hand on me or someone hip checking me. If I'm trying to post up, I'm getting grabbed, and it gets egregious to the point where I have to say something because I just can't play otherwise. Otherwise, why am I here? Right? Why am I on the floor? If you're not going to pass me the ball because I'm getting bumped, and it's frustrating as a player because you know you practice your moves. And sometimes if you're fortunate enough to have a trainer or someone with you, you can get those reps in with some contact, but you're not used to it. And so that's what makes it super difficult. I don't care how much you hit me with a padded, you know, those sticks they use, the bumpers. You can hit me with that all day. It's not the same as being held. It's not the same as an elbow. So I get it. I've been through that. I fucking hate it, quite frankly.
The norm here is like if you're tall, and I'm fairly tall for like I'll typically play center here, but like the trick is when I was going to Saints, it wasn't always the case, but I learned to play the scrappy D. Like I learned to it's like a talent. You have to learn, like they have with their hands, they can so quickly find the hip bone. Yeah. Right. And you know, like basically because like contact on the hip bone, if you're trying to flip somebody and turn it, you want to get that hip bone on the contact because that's how you, like, you're basically putting force on their hip to pivot them out, because what we're trying to do is try to get them off balance off that knee or try to get them off the pivot foot. So you want to find the hip bone on it. Like and you watch and really it's rough, but there is an art to it, right? Yeah. Or like if you know the guy's gonna go a certain direction, like you, and again, you know, you do it in such a way where like you're like you also like, you know, that there's the really unartful way, which is like, yeah, I'm gonna play elbows up. Just like motherfucker, like then you're gonna fucking start a fight. Yeah. I mean, there are people who are play bruises like that.
Anyway. Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm well aware. I've had the chop in the back from the forearm / elbow. I've had the straight elbow in the back. When I was younger, I was fine with it. As I get older, I'm like, I've been covered. We gotta work tomorrow. What are you doing here?
I've been covered with the elbow, that like the point of the elbow to the spine. That's fucking like, well, they're basically you're trying to bump and you see, oh motherfucker, what? Sorry, but like, you know what I mean.
Who had L4 L5 disc issues, trust me, I fucking know this argument. We covered kind of the top of the East and the top of the West. Well, what about that?
I was walking. We didn't talk about the Grizzlies. Grizzlies are good. And I actually do think the Grizzlies are a team that to me can make the conference final. The trick with the Grizzlies is like their second unit is, but like it's a little bit of a mess because they have two identities really. And really, their second identity is maybe better for like the playoffs, which is that big bruiser defense with Dal. But I do think if they're healthy, like last year, I thought if they'd been healthy last year, they could have, like, they literally could have made the finals because like they were that good. It's a little bit more interesting. Like they're kind of, the Grizzlies are a team, like if something happens, I think the Grizzlies could be the team standing in the finals for out of the West. And then like the Kings, do we take the Kings seriously? Like, did I tell you I saw the Kings live?
No. Oh yeah, I saw in New York, right?
Yes, I saw the Kings live in New York, and fucking Matthew Dellavedova was the best team on their bench. It's kind of like, I don't think he's on the team anymore.
Steven Adams is out, and if that's going to continue, I don't like their chances. I just don't.
Oh, you were talking Memphis. I was talking Sacramento.
Okay, you went on Sacramento.
Yeah, right. they need Steven Adams. I wanted Steven Adams for the Celtics. Steven Adams is a guy who, like, he's a great, he's like Al, like in the sense, like he's a great presence to have.
Yeah.
And like just the his teams with him play really hard defensively, really hard on both ends. So you love him. He's going to work hard. He's going to go through a wall. But yeah, he is a key component to that team. Sacramento. Great Sacramento rebound. Is the definition of a happy to be there team. And I don't, honestly, I don't think Sacramento hangs in the top four. I really don't think they hang in the top four till the end of the year in the West. I think they get caught. I think, let's see, next, we talked about the Clippers, we talked about the Suns. Dallas, what do you think of Dallas experiment?
I think they have a similar issue with depth. And they don't, their defense yeah. is not great. So I still believe that the top, if you're top 10 offense, top 10 defense, you have a chance. It's going to come down to health, catching a few breaks, all those things, if you're not one of the top teams. I just don't think the defense is good enough to get it done.
Yeah, I think my experience with Kyrie is like every team that has Kyrie is better off without him. Honestly, mm-hmm. That's been the case. Even though Luka's like transcendent in the I don't think this is I don't think this is the way. I don't think this is the year. I think they're probably a second round exit. They'll give somebody trouble in the first round, but I think right. they're a second. Well, I think so if they get like the Grizzlies in the first round, I think they're gonna get like chopped into bits, right?
So defensive rebounding, and steals. They're 25th in the league. They're 26th in block and 22nd in creating turnovers. That's not gonna get done. You're just hoping to outscore everybody at that point. And you come up against plays defense and you're fucked.
Let's talk about my favorite long shot bet out to win the West. I believe these guys are 110 to 1 to win the West. The Timberwolves. And I explained it, but here's the thing. Like, Conley's really fucking good. Like, so they picked up a bunch of guys. Like, they picked up Conley. They got Kyle Anderson. That team actually has a really good top-line defense now. They've got Conley, who is a baller to run everything. Conley's a guy who makes everybody better. And really, kind of, if you look at their top unit, which is like, it's Edwards, Towns, Gobert, Conley, Jaden McDaniels, Kyle Anderson, Jordan Lawford. That is a really good top seven. I think these guys are going to make, I kind of honestly think these guys are going to be like close to a top four seed. They're going to be a top four seed. And they're going to be really good if everybody's healthy. And really, it's the kind of team with Conley. It's just it's a team like it's a bunch of professional basketball players.
Right.
Now, am I saying I think their fix should be favored to win the West? No, I'm saying that like 110 to 1 to win the West is no, that's insane. This team should be more like maybe 30 to 1 or like maybe 20 to 1 to win the West. Because I do think, again, I think there's a real good chance they're going to be at home the first round. And I think there's a good chance they could be facing a team that's hurt or kind of like injured in the second. So like, something like they're playing the Clippers in round one or like the Kings in round one, and they're playing like the Nuggets or the Grizzlies like that are not 100% in round two, then yeah, I mean, then you're like sitting on a good number for the final. And again, also, as I said, I do think that the Suns, Wolves fans are going to really enjoy this team. If it's like, this is like, you look at that team, and if it was my team, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a fun playoff, because if you look at it, it's a bunch of guys who are like, yeah, you can do shit. Yeah. Now, this might be a referendum on Towns more than anybody else on that, because Towns has been like a head case in some of these playoffs. And really, he really has a great team around him now, right? There's like look at that, like that team, like Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, and Kyle Anderson, the fucking hell of four-man defense, right?
Yeah.
And then all Anthony Towns has to do is help off the ball on that, right? All he has to do is crash and help and like put his hand up when somebody's taking a shot for three and be tall. That's and again, I don't think Towns is a bad defender per se. He's okay. He's not great, but like if you put him in the help role, then he should kind of thrive. So I like this team. I think that like I'm interested to see if they gel, but there's a bunch of character guys, and having a better point guard who can do shit is going to be like really beneficial to this team, I think, right?
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about the bottom of the West before we
go? I do because everyone, I'm struggling to process a lot of national media are like, if the Warriors are in, they're the favorites. And I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? Like, they have no bench. Like, is Gary Payton the second that going to really deliver exactly? Is that
well, Gary Payton the second is hurt in a way that probably means he's not going to be really any good.
The fact basically. Is, right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I don't get the narrative that they're going to be this like powerhouse team when Luke Clay's ratings, he's at not even 60 on his player percentile. So
they basically, they pulled it together last year because that last year's team was really, really good like through 8 or 10 players. They actually like really went out, built the perfect team to build around Steph and have health. This year, they do not have health. They're going to have to be going on the road on that, and they do not have the depth that they had.
Their depth
that they had is gone. Like, they don't have that depth anymore. That really actually is going to kind of matter. They're going to get blown off the court. Like, if they're playing the Grizzlies are going to blow them off the floor for 15 minutes, right? Yeah. Now, it's not as bad as when they had Wiseman, who's the worst player on the court in the entire league, but it's still in a situation where, like, you know, do we trust this team to, like, you know, they're going to have to go on the road and win against these teams who are, like, good. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's going to be more like 2 seasons ago where, like, they're going to struggle to get out of the play-in if they even get to the play-in, because, like, the team that I actually think the team that probably made themselves improve themselves the most, the Lakers improved themselves a significant amount, way more than like the Warriors did, because they cleaned out some of the bad players, brought in players who were like, let's look at the Lakers real quick. So if we look at the Lakers, I had them, like, I do a thing where, like, I look at, like, how much better a team made themselves, and they made themselves, just by getting rid of people, they made themselves like 2 points better. Yep. And then, you know, I don't think Anthony Davis is going to be 100%, but, like, if you add in Vanderbilt, who I think is reasonable, and you add in Reeves, that's fine. What I don't trust, like, I don't trust their guard rotation at all, really. That's kind of where I'm at with, like, the Lakers. It's like, I don't trust D'Angelo Russell. I don't trust Schroeder, right? Yeah. So the point guard rotation is suspect at a high level. But the Lakers did kind of put themselves in a position where, like, if they can win some games, they're what? Like, right now, they're like, let's see, they are, how many games out of? Lakers are 5 games out of the 4 slot.
Yeah.
Now, they do actually start winning some games at the top of the East. The West is tough. But I can talk myself into this team being interesting. I do think that the playoff, the things that happened in the bubble are not going to play out again. And this team is not nearly as good as that team was in terms of depth defensively. But they're a better team than it was like a month ago. But they really only really have 5. They have 5 players that are useful in a playoff, and they're really weak at guard. They're really like if you put them in a series against a team, like, any team coming out of the East is going to destroy them if they somehow manage to get to the final. Any team coming out of the East is going to destroy their guard rotation.
Yeah,
it literally, like, the Bucks are going to eat them alive. The Celtics are going to eat them alive. Even the Sixers would eat them alive. Like on that particular that. And I think that, you know, I think both, like, the top of the tippy top contenders, the top 4 or 5 teams in the West are better, right? And I do think that, like, I mean, I respect for pulling together a roster and not sacrificing a lot of what they didn't want that. But if you're top, I can't get past the fact that your top point guard rotation is Russell and Schroeder.
Oof. No.
If these guys had actually managed to get Conley in the house, then I'm seeing a different story, because that would be a put in a guard, and then, like, I here's the thing, like, the Lakers do a good job at filling out the roster spots from their D League team. So I think if they'd actually gotten the better guard and like that would have been a spot where, like, now I'm like, this is okay, this is better, but it's still a 4-5 team to me, and I think the West is tough enough where, like, they're not going to get out. I mean, here's the thing, I think they can actually win a playoff series. Realistic. I think they can get in and they can win a playoff series. Depending on which playoff, they're not winning if it's like them and the Nuggets,
right?
Or them and the Grizzlies, or them and like the Suns, and the Suns are healthy, right? The Suns seem to have their number too, and like I just kind of feel like if it's the Suns and Durant is healthy, Durant's not letting that shit happen, right? Yeah. So
who's in the guard?
Like, so
who's in the guard? KD. If you're looking at the Lakers roster, who would you put on Durant?
Anthony Davis, basically.
Yeah, that's
and pray.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you do that, then Devin Booker's having a really good series. Like, they miss Alex Caruso so much. Right. Let's see. Anybody else at the bottom of, like, if the Pels were healthy, the Pels are interesting as a spoiler.
Right, but no,
because
no
Zion Williamson.
Yeah, no Zion. No,
yeah,
chance.
But Zion, but Zion kind of like does make a difference. That team is continuing to improve. kind of respect that, like, you know, they might get Victor with the Lakers pick, or like somebody was joking that they should get Bronny. They should draft Bronny with the Lakers picks in a couple of years, and like then hijack the Lakers. Okay, so that kind of does it for the West.
Yep.
Then we talk about the East. We already talked about the Celtics,
right? Yeah, so I think it's a good segue. I think it's a good segue because we talked about kind of the top three, really, what we think about them. Cavaliers are interesting because they're long. They've got the two bigs, and I'm really trying to figure out. I'm friends with an EVP in the Cavs organization, and I told her that if the Cavs end up playing the Heat in the playoffs. At every home game, they have to troll Miami by announcing Dean Wade the way that Dwayne Wade's name was done in Miami. Just troll the show because I don't really understand
Dean Wade.
Yeah,
I like that. I like that.
Yeah, it'd be funny, right?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
But I don't understand why they let Love go. Why would you not want a veteran presence in the playoffs who can come in and?
They already have. I mean, they have Rubio, and I think they like Dean Wade enough. Where like they, you know, if you look at the rotation, they weren't gonna play Wade because they've got Dean Wade, they've got Jared Allen, they've got Mobley, they've got you know, they have a solid guard rotation, and even I think Seti, like, so I don't think they were gonna like play him at all. You know, the guy who they missed on this team actually is Markkanen, right?
Yeah.
And I know they got Mitchell for him, but like if this team had Markkanen, then like, because Markkanen again, big guy, stretch the floor. So I'm like, there's a team like, hey, Muscala would probably be good for them. Like, because like having a guy who can kind of come in and give you big minutes off of, see one of the advantages of having Mobley and Jared Allen, which they're not exploiting with this current roster, is they let you play these like the defensively subpar big guys who are offensively plus par. So Love and Markkanen on this team playing next to like Mobley and Allen are significantly more valuable because like those two guys can cover up their shit. And they're basically just playing off the ball on defense, but then they could just go wild on offense, right?
Right.
Yeah. And particularly play against the second units. And they don't really have that 3-point or like stretch of four big to pair on the like secondary units with mm-hmm. Allen and Mobley. And that was like a really nice twist that they did, and it worked really well. Although, I mean, again, if they have Mobley and Allen healthy, they're really good defensively, and they got Mitchell. So they went like a little more guard heavy. But I would still want, like, the thing that's missing to me on this team is they need a stretch the floor 3 or 4, right? So they need a guy who can kind of play off and like
stretch the floor four. You mean like Kevin Love?
Well, but I mean, I understand why they didn't stick to him, because I think he was a little bit past the expiration. I think Markkanen was better in that role, and they want to play Rubio. And they want to slam down on the defensive guards, and they basically want to cut. You kind of need to cover up for Donovan. So there's no D in Donovan. Donovan Mitchell. But like, I mean, like, he's actually like, it's been okay. But like, again, you kind of want to be able to play these guards that like are going to cover up like Ricky. But I do think that the missing piece is a guy like Markkanen. And I understand why they went the other direction. But I do think that if I'm looking for them, like, I'm trying to find a guy like that who maybe isn't like in the draft, who isn't rated that highly defensively, but he is a good, like stretch the floor big, right? Sure. But more long term. I think, again, here's the thing for Cleveland. I don't think they're not winning the titles, right? So I think that like making moves to get their younger guys experience and making moves to get these guys like playoff reps in the short term is good. I think that like Love is a piece if you think you can kind of win the title. And I think the upside for Cleveland is making the conference finals, right? I don't think they're not winning the title. Historically, this kind of team does is like get reps, get better for the future. So with that in mind, I think what they did kind of made some sense. Let's talk about the Bucks first. Right. So the Bucks are like the oldest team in the league, effectively on the top end, and they are very much built for like a run now around Giannis. But I do think this is kind of the end of this. This nucleus is getting close to the expiration date on that. Like, Middleton can't stay on the court, and he's not as good as he was. Lopez same deal, is going to have problems with injuries. Holiday and Giannis are like, so I do think that, like, again, you don't beat Giannis to survive him, but I do think Boston has the edge on them. But if Boston has the edge on them, but if Milwaukee beats Boston, I think Milwaukee wins the title, right? I do think that Milwaukee is looking at, like, having to make some hard roster choices this offseason, because the roster is starting to get long in the tooth, and they do really have to retool at some point around you. They've already kind of, but you kind of need to retool a little bit around Giannis and Drew. Although, I mean, Drew is also getting up there, but I think Drew still has, like, a little bit more. Like, Middleton's the guy that maybe you've gone past the point where you should have moved, right? Because I think I would probably pay Portis over. You'd be fine playing Portis if you went out and moved Middleton for, like, pieces that were, like, younger and simple, right? Yeah. Maybe slightly a little off. It's a little bit where, like, but again, Giannis is Giannis. So, like, if Giannis is in a series, Giannis can fucking, he can hang 50 on you and beat you. So, like, that's kind of where they are.
Do you know what I don't like about, like, the Celtics real quick? What I don't like about them? And then why I think the Bucks do have a chance, or that why it's going to be a great series. They shoot a lot. The Celtics, when the year started, they were like a juggernaut, right? And if you look at their shooting statistics, they shoot a fuck ton of threes. Like, not a little. Like, everyone has the green light. And it doesn't matter if it's Luke Kornet, Muscala, like, anyone on the roster, they'll, like, shoot the three. And that's great if you're going in, but they've cooled off since that hot start. And what does Milwaukee do love to do? Guard the three-point line. So I think it's set up to be like this. It's going to be a clash of can they impose their will? And will the Celtics be smart enough to say, look, they clearly just want to fucking get us to the rim, so they have Lopez protecting it. Let's go out and get him in foul trouble, and the series is over, right? I think the three-point shooting, to me, it's reading whether or not to attack or to shoot it. Because if the shot's not falling, you're not going to shoot yourself out of that against a team that explicitly wants to get you off the three-point line. So hopefully the Celtics will read that, react to that.
Yeah, it's the most interesting series. I think they have the edge. And I think some of that will tighten up when it comes to playoff time, because you're not going to give everyone the green light in playoffs. I think I agree with giving everyone the green light during the season and figuring it out and getting into a groove on that. So, like, here's the thing. One of the things they've done for this season is Derek White and Malcolm Brogdon both found their shit. Like, yep. Derek White in particular is in a much better spot than he was 6 months ago. Like, Derek White is an actual, like, he's back to being an actual asset and a really good player. So that's actually, like, been a plus. And again, I think that, like, no, I agree. Like, but I mean, again, even that, like, as I said, they got Muscala, who I think is a significant improvement on their 3-point shooting. Like, if you need a 3-point shooting big coming off the bench, Muscala is, like, ideal. Right? Like, I'm going to look up his basketball reference, because I think he's 40% for three this year. Basketball. Ooh, this is very interesting audio. Like, listen to him as he looks up Mike Muscala on Basketball Reference. But yeah, I think it's like I think it's notable enough that I should. Muscala is shooting 39% from three, over 39% from three this year. He shot 43% last year. And so the Celtics basically have given him the green light to just, hey, just go out and fucking shoot, man. They've got him taking like 4.3 threes a game, and actually they've got him taking 11 threes per 36. So yeah, this is smart. Get a guy who can shoot threes. Like, if you're gonna shoot threes, go out and get a guy who can make threes and give him the green light to fucking shoot threes. Like, where the hell is Mike Muscala shooting anything? Like, you know, the split for Muscala should be like threes and putbacks. He's a big tall guy who can shoot. Like, threes and putback, and if they foul him on the putback, you put him on the fucking line, and he's only a 50. That is fucking weird. How can you?
That's not good.
He's an 85%. He's an 85% free throw shooter for his career. So yeah, you just use the guys in the role appropriately. So I understand that. I think that's a real interesting thing, because I think Milwaukee is extremely good defensively, and Giannis is great. I think Middleton being in or out is underrated. But I did think, you see the game where, like, the Celtics bench basically took the Bucks to overtime.
I do think that,
Derek White and Brogdon and Muscala was really good in that that game. And the Celtics do have a bunch of like really great role players, right? It's bad that like Grant Williams has regressed like significantly, but I do kind of think Grant is a guy who can kind of like, if he settles his head, he can kind of still be a good piece, but you don't need to rely on him now that like a couple of the other guys have come up. Right. Even Peyton, you know, it's fine. I think, let's see, we talked about Milwaukee, Cleveland. What about Miami? What do you think about Miami? Too old at this point?
I think they're old. They added more age with Love. Lowry's not the same player he was. I just don't. Can they win a 7-game series against the top teams in the East? I really find that hard to believe.
It depends on they could beat the Sixers. I mean, then anybody could beat
the Sixers. Anybody can beat the Sixers. Only because
I give anybody a chance against the Sixers.
Because Harden completely fucking disappear again. So yeah.
Well, no, it's the theory of Rock Divers. Rock Divers, like Doc Rivers will always play down his playoff opponent. Always. Yeah, everybody will always have a chance to beat Doc Rivers in the playoffs. They shouldn't. It's like even that one ring they won. People forget that the fucking Hawks took some games. Mm-hmm. And that's like, yeah, they struggled and mildly overcame with like anyway. But like looking at the Sixers, I don't take the Sixers seriously again because of Hart, because of Doc Rivers. I don't like the trade that they made. I'm not taking the Sixers team seriously. Would you pick the Sixers the Cavaliers in the series?
Sixers over Cavs? Probably not, only because I don't think they have anyone that would take. So you have to take out, I was talking about this in the last episode, about having two bigs and a really good guard. So they've got that. The Cavs do. So you got Mitchell, then you got Mobley, and you have Allen. Do I think Mobley and Allen could somewhat minimize Embiid? Yes, I do. Because PJ Tucker is just going to stand in the corner and pass the ball out and shoot maybe 1-3 every four games. So that the 4-5 combo for the Cavs, I think combined, can shut down the core of what makes the Sixers go, which is Embiid. And I think Harden's a fucking no-show in the playoffs. So they've got length to defend on drives. I would like to have the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. I think, like, they'd realistically be in. I think it'd be down to a lot of work on Embiid. Embiid seems to kind of get bumped up in the series. He's going to, like, do a lot of work and get hurt, maybe, like. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely take the Cavs are going to probably get a favorable. Like, if that was a series, I'd be taking the Cavs, probably be getting some favorable stats on the series.
Yeah.
So I'd expect the Cavs to, like the Sixers to be favored and be the Cavs on that series. So like, yeah, I don't take them very seriously as a contender. We talked about the Heat, we talked about the Cavs. The Knicks are interesting. You know why the Knicks are interesting? The Knicks are interesting because you know who the worst player in the rotation is?
No.
Oh, this is easy. Oh, dude, he got benched recently.
The worst player in the Knicks rotation. I gotta pull up the fucking roster. I don't watch Knicks basketball. It's hard. I just don't enjoy
it's their talisman, their ace. It's RJ Barrett. RJ Barrett is the worst player. RJ Barrett is the worst player in the rotation. Like if and again, their coach Thibs basically sat him down in crunch time recently, and he's right to do it. Like Barrett is real. It's funny because it's the first guy they paid, but he really is not. I've got him rated as 35.7, and that means he's 35.7, 35. He's like in the bottom 200. Like he's in the lower half of the league. He might be one of the worst guys.
Yeah, I didn't understand the contract they gave him. I really didn't understand it. People were like, oh, it's a great contract. It's a great deal. Like he's not that good. Like
he's ahead in the right now. They've got Randall Brunson, Quentin Grimes. I don't know that Quentin Grimes would be getting that many minutes. I would rather have Josh Hart getting minutes.
Right.
Barrett definitely should not be getting minutes over Mitch Robb, Quickly, or Harston, right? So, and even probably over Tobin. So, Fournier, Jesus Christ, that is, I remember like the Celtics traded for it. And I was like, the Knicks basically bailed the Celtics out of that terrible contract. Yeah. Fournier's like, God, he's such a disaster.
He plays well in Europe. Like, he's great in Europe. It just sucks here.
It's some guys, it's a style thing. Like, you know, it's sometimes he's like, they used to like certain style, certain way to play called, and maybe he just runs the sets in Europe better. But like, you know, here's the thing. The Knicks are really interesting because like if Barrett wasn't in the rotation, I'd be kind of gassing them up as a, hey, this team can be like a top four team and be interesting. But like, you know, if somebody offered the Knicks something for Barrett, you'd have to take it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like, I know they're not, that's not the way they think, but really this numbers are kind of like, he's might be one of the worst contracts in the league. Cause like he's getting paid like a star, but like he might be the worst guy getting paid like a star in the league. Like who's worse? Who's the guy that like is getting star money that's like plays worse than, I mean, like I used to complain about Andrew Wiggins, but Andrew Wiggins plays better. Andrew Wiggins, I got him at like, Wiggins is playing really well and at similar money.
Right.
Wiggins had actually like figured it out on a good team, and Wiggins always had like flashes of, Wiggins was always a guy it's the Rudy Gay conundrum, which is like there are guys who just shouldn't be the primary shooter or the primary like usage guy, right?
Yep.
Rudy Gay was like that.
I was just looking up the Heat because you said who's the worst contract, one of the worst contracts in the league. There he is, Duncan Robinson.
Oh Jesus Christ! Yeah,
that's gotta be one of the worst, right? He's unplayable.
But I don't think Duncan Robinson has an RJ Barrett contract. Hold on, Duncan Robinson. What is his contract? Contract? Because like, oh, like
different.
He's 5 years. It's five year. It's 95 years, which is like 5 years. 90 is like a mid. It's like a mid tier contract. Now that's like 18 a year. That's like a 5 year 45 like 5 years ago. So yeah, that's not like RJ Barrett is a serious. This guy's making 18. So Duncan Robinson is making 18 a year. RJ Barrett is making, hold on, contract. I believe he's making close to 30. Yeah, he's making 120. He signed a 120 extension.
Ben Simmons. That's who's worse.
RJ Barrett is four. It's a 4 year 30. See, here's the thing. I think Simmons right now is a failure of. There's a good coach on him now that should be able to figure it out. I don't know. I mean, Simmons, the thing with Simmons is he's a center that can dribble, yeah. Really, to me. And the way to use him is to use him defensively as a five. And he's been good at defensively as a five and then kind of get him out of the funk where like he doesn't. But like, his numbers now are still good when he plays. It's right. Just this like weird thing where he's in his own head, his coach is in his head, and kind of, I don't know what the, you know, trade up to Pop or something. Pop can figure him out. Like, trade up to somebody who like he's going to wind up with Spores. Like, eventually Simmons is going to wind up with a coach that's like going to like, you know, make him into like a really great role player effectively. He's weird because he physically he has a skill set. He's shown he can do it, but like he's in his own fucking head. So who knows? Right.
I look at the Miami roster and I clearly don't watch the Heat enough. Who the fuck is Haywood Highsmith? That's gotta be a name, right? Is that an actual player in the league?
That's probably what, you know how Miami like defines these guys and develops them. Haywood Highsmith is a,
I never heard of this guy. Was he drafted? Like,
probably not. Let's see. He went pro and he was undrafted in the 2018-19 draft. He signed with the Merlins of the Bundesliga. He basically, he was playing this year. He played for Bagnoli Canola of the Italian Basketball League.
Wow.
And then he played for, in 2020, he played with the Miami, he signed a 10-day contract with the Heat in 2021, in December. And then he played for the Delaware. He was playing the Delaware Bluecoats for the G League. And then he signed a 10-day contract with the Heat like last week.
But that's
and
why.
Then he signed. He's basically not crazy. He signed two 10-day contracts, and then he basically just signed a standard contract. He literally just signed a standard contract with the Heat. So the Heat have actually like, here's the thing: the guy's been playing with the Bluecoats, and let's see, are the Bluecoats a Heat affiliate? Let's see. They're affiliated with the Sixers.
Yeah, Sixers.
So he was with the Sixers affiliate, but he's actually had a bunch of 10-day contracts with the Heat. So he was like, so he, this was, he went, he was on his third 10-day contract with the Heat, and then he basically just signed him. So this, what this tells me is he's a Heat lifer a little bit in a way that, or like, he's a guy, what I mean by that is he's a guy that Heat like, you know how the Heat are. They find these guys who they like, are cultural fits, and like, even if they're only getting like a couple minutes, this is a guy, like, if he signed three 10-day contracts with the Heat and now has a, like, a full year, there's a good chance this guy's going to be riding the bench for the Heat for like a while, because they find these guys that they like and that can, like, that are smart and put them in as a bench. They're kind of like player coach guys. So, like, yeah, this, he seems like a guy who might be one of the, I mean, I need to like look, but given that he signed three contracts with them and he's got like a bunch of, like, he seems like a very spo guy to sit on the bench, right?
I'll guarantee you this. This is the only podcast in the world talking about Haywood Eisman.
No. You know what? There's a bunch of I know a lot of the Heat lifer, and like the Heat lifers will probably like, yeah, the guy's been on three. Like, so somebody in that office likes him. So yeah, some guys on the Heat like Beat will talk about him.
He was a D2 player of the year, so that's not nothing.
No. He's played Serie A. And he's played some. Yeah, he's not. God,
I cannot wait for my Mike Wazindio to sign him in a few years.
Hey man, bring him in. Make some contacts with the Miami office. Like, wow, what the hell?
Was it Tyree Gibbons? That's what we had. Tyree Gibbons right now. We had Dwight Weitz before that. Like, just keep bringing these guys in. Love it.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, is there anybody else in the East that we think like that we seriously want to consider? No. Right.
No. I can't see so once KD and Kyrie left, everyone's like, oh, the power shift. And I'm like, those are two flawed teams. Stop. But they only took one team in the Nets out of that top five. And everyone always felt like the rest of the East was the rest of the East. You got Trey pushing his coach out again. Like, the Wizards just meandering per usual. You know, I think Raptors are interesting. You know, 7-3, lost 10.
You know, it would be a hilarious result. I want a game 7 for Nets and Sixers in round 1. Because if you think about that, here's the thing: the Nets, I think, you know, they made some trade, but they, as I said, they picked up some basketball players.
Yep.
Jack Spallan is a really good coach. So I think that's a professional basketball team. They're probably like a little bit better than 500. They're probably like a 45 win team. I'd say with what they have, because again, I think professionally coached, good system now that like they are that. Again, that Nets staff has always been good. It's just, I didn't get why they didn't go Jack Vaughn over. Like, I mean, I do get why they went Nash over Vaughn, because the players kind of like took over and like forced them to make some non-basketball choices. But I do think the guys that they have, like Bridges, Dinwiddie, Claxton, Finney Smith, Cam Johnson, you know, Simmons can kind of get his head out of his own ass with that. That is a team that can, you know, if you're playing the Sixers, the Ben Simmons led Nets taking the Sixers, the Doc Rivers Sixers. Oh,
They'd bury him on the bench. Let's not kid ourselves. He'd probably like DNP, not dress for the game at Philly. Like, I don't know what the Kardashian or whoever
you want to
him, but Jesus Christ, that guy's head.
You want to hear? I feel for him, funny, but,
man.
You want to hear a funny thing about Ben Simmons? He might be legit one of the toughest guys in the NBA. You know, he was a pro level rugby player effectively.
Really?
And he got into basketball, but he would have been a pro level rugby player. Like, if you look at his, like, he was playing rugby, he really loved it. And he would have made the pros. And like, if you remember, like, there was this one time, I think it was Carl Anthony Towns who came after Embiid, and Simmons basically just grabbed him like a baby, put him in a chokehold and just like choked him out on the court. Because like Simmons is one of those guys, like, he's got the calm, but like physically, like, he is a physically like tough guy. Again, if you played rugby's like a crazy sport,
right?
But it's just, I just think, I've always thought that like effectively that this is, he doesn't love basketball, this is not his thing, right?
Right,
this is not the thing that he loves. But like, effectively, he physically, like, now I always remember like the ones there, like playing the Heat, like, he was pushing people, like, I've seen him push people around in the block, right? As is like, it's, which is like the funniest thing. Like, he has a physical defensive center. He is, you know, he is more Draymond. He's miscast in this role. He's more Draymond Green than the role he's in. And if some team had actually like gotten him from the start and just put him in that role, I mean, again, the problem is Joel Embiid exists, so you can't have him be your primary rim protector and have him be that role. But if he'd been on a team where, like, look, just be low usage, but be like that Russell, Bill, like that Bill Russell, that like Draymond Green defensive guy, like Ben Wallace defensive role, where like you're just down the, you're just down there and you're trying to frustrate the other team from scoring, and we don't expect you to carry any of the offensive load, he'd be a massively better player, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, just occasionally, and then just like work on getting his offensive game so like you can slowly pick up his usage. Which is that, like, I think he, like, if he'd gotten on the coach with like Spo or like Pop, they would have been much better for him because they would have used him. Like, this is like, right. Or like how Cleveland uses even Evan Mobley, where like they only use him offensively in spots, right? Yep. They're not relying on Evan Mobley to like carry the offensive load. They just want him to be that guy who plays incredible defense and never gets into foul trouble, right? Yep. Same thing with Allen, which is kind of like a huge advantage. And I think Simmons, that's what he should have been cast at. And, you know, partly because of the teams and the players he was with, he was never that guy, right? I think he would have been more comfortable. He would have been more comfortable, I think, mentally being like a rugby bat, just being a fucking bruiser, being a guy who like just keeps people from scoring at the rim and occasionally comes in and gets putbacks and kind of like occasionally does some shit around the rim because he's tall and he can kind of like dribble the ball. But like, you know, bit more, you know, who's actually similar like that, like, I don't know. Have you ever seen stuff from Clint Capela when he was in Europe? Same thing. Clint Capela can like drive the ball when he's playing here, but like you don't want him to do that. Just play defense and occasionally play off the ball, and that's fine. It's just, I think sometimes players are miscast, and I think that's kind of where we at. We're like with the Nets, but I think again, I think the most hilarious, I now want the Nets Sixers round one series. I really do. I think that's the play. Like Sixers at three, Nets at six. Let's do that. And then we can get like Cavaliers Knicks. And then the Celtics would be what? Celtics Hawks or something? Yeah. And then like Heat Bucks. Yeah, that's the fun. Yeah. That's the fun. Celtics Hawks, Heat Bucks, Sixers Nets, Cavaliers Knicks. Sounds like the ideal first round for the West. For the East.
It does.
Because it sounds like a mess of drama. And then out West, let's see. Nuggets Warriors or Nuggets Lakers? What do you think is better?
I probably want to see the Lakers. Because I want to see how Davis ends up.
So Nuggets, Lakers, Grizzlies, Warriors? No, Grizzlies, Mavericks?
That'd be such a high scoring. 145, first to 150 wins. I mean, that'd be crazy high scoring.
Kings, Timberwolves on NBA TV, which still be, I'd watch that. Kings, Timberwolves on NBA TV. And then Suns, Clippers on like, basically that would be the national game. Yeah. Suns Clippers as the 4-5 would be the national game out of the West. Yeah.
Yep.
That would be the game that ESPN would want. Like, they would totally want that series. And actually, that would be a fun, interesting series because I don't know what the hell the outcome would be for that from a Suns Clippers. So that's if it's stuck. Like, I mean, you can get a lot of interesting Suns series and a lot of interesting Clippers series.
That'd be the State Farm Insurance first round matchup with all the injuries. Blue Cross might jump in, help sponsor this one, but this is like the infirmary game. Whoever doesn't get injured,
it's also the Cliff Paul series. So of course it's a State Farm, like a neighbor. It's like their pitch man in State Farm series with the two teams that like the team he's on now, the team he's most famously associated with, the Clippers. I mean, the Hornets, but like at this point, nobody remembers Chris Paul and the Hornets.
You know, Oregon marketing, right? I'm joking.
Yes.
Oh man! So yeah, I think it's going to be. I think we're looking at potentially some fantastic first round matchups. We got 20 something games left. Health's going to play a huge role in all this stuff.
If you have to pick the finals, what do you got?
We haven't really seen KD with the Kings or the Suns to see if they're dominant.
I've got Celtics Nuggets. I got Celtics Nuggets. I do think this is the time where Jokic makes the finals. I think this is time. And people forget he got to a conference finals, and that team, like Anthony Davis, had the most insane shooting 2 weeks of his life, right? And that's why they beat that Nuggets team. People forget, Jokic came down and fucking scored the winning bucket, and then Anthony Davis came back and scored a three-pointer to win that game. But if you look at that play, I remember I was looking at that play clearly because the Nuggets played perfect defense on that play. That was a shot you wanted the Lakers to take. You wanted Anthony Davis taking a faraway three, and you're like, you live with that shot. It went in, but you live with that shot, right?
Right.
You have to live with it. So effectively, I think it's the Nuggets' time. Out west, I mean, yeah, obviously they can get hurt, but I do think it's their time. Yeah. I do think if they make the finals, they're not, it's first time finals, they're not going to get any fucking calls. So I do think it's the Celtics' favorites if they get that. So I would say it's the Celtics over the Nuggets if they do that. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if it's the Bucks over, I don't know, Bucks over the Suns, right? I do think the team that comes out of the East should be favored, right?
If it's not Celtics, it's Bucks. I think the fact that Middleton's back, if they're healthy, I like them slightly. Because Giannis to me is still the biggest freak in the world. And he just does things that you watch him and you're like, what the fuck? Like, how would you guard this? You can't.
I said two dribbles from half court
and he's dunking on you. It's like, what the fuck?
I said this last year. You do not beat Giannis in the playoffs. You survive.
Yeah.
Right? Giannis, when the Celtics beat him last year, they didn't beat him. Right?
Right.
Giannis did everything humanly. I remember he put 50 up in the it's like prime LeBron. You didn't beat prime LeBron. You fucking you survived him on the edges. It wasn't about him losing. It was about you beating the rest of his fucking team because he is that freaking good. He's just you're just trying to outlast him. It's the same thing with that Celtics team that won the title over LeBron. They went to seven and LeBron put up 50 you just survived. It's the same thing with Giannis. You just survive. He is that fucking good. Yeah. And as I said, I think if they get to the finals, I don't think there's any team. There isn't a team out west to cover Giannis.
No.
Right? That can put up maybe Memphis, if they're fully healthy, kind of slow them down a bit. But even then, they're getting blown off the court. There isn't anybody at this point. Giannis, he's just Giannis. And I think that's kind of what it is. I think...
This is the discussion I had in the last episode too, which was Pistons fans are going crazy because things aren't clicking and we're not doing this and we didn't beat this team and last night we lost on a tip in Orlando and people are going crazy, fired Dwayne Casey. Why? It doesn't fucking matter. No one's beating Giannis, and we sure as hell aren't beating with this roster. So what would the point of coaching change be? Right? Why we know what our position is. We're tanking for Wemby. That's it. That's what we're doing. We're talent deficient. And when I look at the rest of the Eastern Conference, the Celtics are not talent deficient at all. Neither are the Bucks. The Sixers, questionable. Cavaliers, they're good. Juggernauts. Those two are juggernauts.
I'm going to ask you a tough question as a Pistons fan. Would you trade this Pistons roster straight up for the Magic roster?
So, at this point, probably. I say that because Bancaro's hit a wall. He didn't score in the first half last night against the Pistons, whose defense is dog shit.
Isn't he 19? How old is Paul Banchero? 21? Paul Banchero's only 21-year-old rookie. What do we do? I remember LeBron. Do you remember LeBron? LeBron, his junior year was, he was... similar to this, where he was fine, he was great. No, LeBron was great at 20, but he, as a 20-year-old, there is a wall of how good you can be at 20, right? Unless you're Kareem fucking Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, Kareem didn't play in the league at 20, but it's really Moses Malone wasn't that great as a 20-year-old playing in the ABA. He was fine, he could do a lot of rebounds, but he was limited. And I think that there's we're kind of used to, at 20, unless you're a guy like Luka who's been playing pro ball since he was 16, right? Mm-hmm. There's a limited amount of reps. Paolo Banchero's, not played at this level against this competition enough still to have the skill set. the guys like Luka, like we judge people by Luka, but Luka, again, when he was like 16, Luka was covering Russell Westbrook in an NBA like La Liga game. He's playing at the top level, and you get these reps. I think Banchero is hitting the wall of like now defenses are giving him the full-on star treatment, and he still doesn't have the reps to understand how to beat that and how to get the whistles on that. But that'll come, right? I think Banchero, like honestly, and again, looking at both those rosters, like Orlando has four or five guys I could see being rotation pieces or better on a championship team, right? Whereas I think right now on the Pistons, I don't see any guys who I'd say, oh, this guy is definitely rotation. Maybe Brooks possibly could be, but he's like an eighth guy on a good team. Like there's nobody on this.
I think Bogdanovich, but he's older. I mean, he's in his 30s. So that's the one you're building around. I like.
No, I'm saying like, but is Cade definitely somebody you see as a top four guy on a top four team?
He is. So again, he's got this fucking injury. Like the piss. I just don't understand what the whatever. He's injured, so we can't put.
What's his upside? Jaylen Brown.
I'm trying to think of what the comps were coming out of Oklahoma State.
And people are going to say, oh, you're dissing him by saying Jaylen Brown. But Jaylen Brown, Jaylen Brown is a perfect complement. Like if Jaylen Brown's your second best guy or third best guy, he's got that Pippen kind of thing where like he's good at defending. He can be a good scorer. He can shoot. He can drive the ball. Like, he's not going to do it on every night. He's not going to be the primary, but like he can do all these complementary things. If you put him next to like, if you put Jaylen Brown to, like, say, next to Steph Curry, he's fucking great because, like, he's a great guy to put next to a top guy who's taking all the pressure, right? So guys like that, who can be that B and C guy, are really, like, and have, like, our jack-of-all-trades can do that and can also, like, take a step to the next level and take over when you need to be, are great. And I think, like, you know, we've got Cunningham listed as a point guard now? What the fuck? Is he a point guard?
Sort of.
Isn't he really?
Well, he was the primary ball handler when he was there. Yes, Ivy was not brought in to be a point guard. They forced him to be a point guard because of Cade's injury, and he's actually played really well. He had a good game last night as well.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I see
Cade as being that secondary guy, which is why we're tanking again. Which is why I don't give a fuck if we win or lose this season. Because you know what? We need generational talent. That's all. Generational talent beats generational talent. Right, unless we're trying to recreate the 04 Pistons with a bunch of like what the Nets have right now.
Basically. Who's your
right?
Who's your GM? Who's your GM right now?
Troy Weaver.
I would say that if I was running the Pistons or I was giving the advice, I'd say, look, do the same thing the Celtics did. Go out and find a good who is the best like coach out there in college basketball that you're willing to give like some guy, young guy. We can give 5 years to and say like, look, start building this, like get some, like basically like just nuke it. Don't get any vets. Don't get any like these old heads. Like, no. Let's get these guys. We young, bring them in coaches wise. I mean, like let's bring in a coach and figure out like, I think like figure out, try to find the next guy, like a young, yeah. Maybe it's a woman. Like I've said this before, like I've been a proponent of going out and finding the best woman coach in college basketball because since nobody's hired a woman, you're going to get better candidates, right? Than you would if you're looking like, because it's a pool that nobody's tapped. Like, who is the best woman's, up and coming woman's coach out there? Go find her, hire her. Or hire people who like hire, I mean, I think there's like a female assistant. Like, hire these people, like bring them in, get them in, like bring that staff. Because I do think that right now, my opinion, like, I think I would trust the, what's the name of that? The West Side Lake, South Bay Lakers, the Lakers development team The South Bay Lakers are finding guys who can stick on the NBA court. I think they're probably better than what the Pistons are doing in terms of determining talent. And I'm being tough, but like if you think about it, like that South Bay Lakers team's actually done a really good job at finding guys on the edges that stick in the league, right? The Warriors are good at that. Like look at these organizations that are really good at finding ancillary pieces and raid the guys who are doing that talent development, put them on your staff, and start building around the edges because ultimately these teams that are good long-term, like the Celtics are good at that too. The Celtics are good at finding these guys on there, or like bringing these guys along, putting them on a D-League team, and finding these guys at the edge of the bench, like Luke Kornet, like finding guys like Luke Kornet and getting useful value out of Luke Kornet, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of staff that you need to bring in, because if you do that long term, you'll be successful, right? Like, and I know they're focusing on the home run ball, but I do think that like if you're building a team, what you really need to focus on long term is focus on the D-League, focus on getting these development guys for the edges, because if you do that, your team will start getting competitive. You'll start getting guys at the edges who are good. And if you start getting guys at the edges who are good and professional basketball players, that'll pro up your organization. And when rookies come in, they'll learn good habits from these guys who have to work hard to get there, right? If that makes sense.
Because
then you create a culture.
The Pistons, the Motor City Crews, when they first came back to Detroit, they were stacked. And they had they're like one of the best G League teams in the league, and in the span of a year, they're now I haven't checked their record lately, but they were god awful for this season, and I don't know exactly what happened, like if they just let a bunch of guys go, but we've not seen anybody, the Pistons have not seen one player come from the G League since that in the last several years. That has come up, you know, obviously the COVID season, everybody got to play. Fuck, there were BSN guys playing in the NBA. But last year and this year, there have been no G League guys coming up because they keep taking it on projects and these reclamation projects. RJ Hampton is the latest addition to the roster. Same thing. Another reclamation
James project. Wiseman.
James Wiseman.
James Wiseman. Yes.
They just can't get enough of these, like, Island of Misfit Toys players. At some point, it's got to stop. But again, if we don't have generational talent, what's the harm? I guess it's a different way of doing it.
I think what they tried to do with Casey is they thought, hey, let's bring Casey in, and Casey can bring in kind of the similar system to what they had in Toronto. But I think they confused the thing that was causing the system. The system in Toronto wasn't Casey. The system in Toronto was the system. The system in Toronto was Nurse and the assistants and the people in the back of the organization does like an extremely good job. Like, think about the Raptors. Raptors are a team also who do a good job at finding players on the scenes.
Yeah, and development.
At development, at getting guys who play a certain style in a certain way, right? So organizationally, they have a mentality that is consistent because they have these long-term assistants, they have these long-term stat guys, and they have this long-term assistant. And I think that's kind of the thing. That's why I say, like, go find a young, up-and-coming, successful, like, you know, Brad Stevens type, and says, like, just find that. Maybe it's a woman coach. Maybe find the best female coach in college who if you don't hire her, is going to, you know, build the program out for the next 20 years and be successful. Yeah. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to build a system where it's consistently cult. Like, you want to get like that A-list organizational piece that'll build the organization around that. And you want that, like, do they own their own D-League team, right?
Yes, they got rid of the drive, and then they formed the Crews, which now play on the Wayne State campus, which is right by Little Caesars Arena.
Which is fantastic. So what you want to do is set up the culture so that we have a person on top on the team and also kind of has their staff working both organizations, then start bringing in talent, like, start bringing in that feeder talent, creating that culture, and focus money on that, right? And it doesn't mean you're not going to get the draft picks, right? You're going to get the draft picks, but effectively, you want to get to the point where you can field a competitive basketball team. Like, you want to get to the point where you can field a 35 win team, right? From your development, right? And when I say a 35 win team, is like, because if you can do that from your development, like a team that's like 35 win team isn't a playoff team, but it is competitive. Right, it's going to be like competitive on most nights, and then you can start saying, okay, let's start bringing in these like development, like these college guys. But you need to have that organization around them, so when they come in, they're learning shit, right? Well, like, if somebody comes, it's
interesting fact. This is the last year of Brian Casey's contract, so I've always felt that I didn't realize. I thought maybe he had one more year, but my theory has always been he's going front office, that they'll bring him, or he's just going to retire. He's 65. And that they were never going to fire him. Like, that's the thing I don't understand. Screaming for a coach who was brought in to manage a young team and manage a tank, essentially. Like, he did his job. Good for you. Like, great job. But like you said, time for someone new.
Well, I mean, I think if I'm the owner of that team, I'm basically looking at I need a better culture. I need to think about this like the old 5-year plans. I need to think about this 5-year plan. Yeah. And I would turn over talent and bring in young kind of talent that I can let play. Like there's no expectations for this team for the next 5 years. So just bring in somebody who bring culture and start bringing that in. And again, look at the teams who are successful that raid them, and look at the college teams that are successful that, and try to find the best talent that's interested in the NBA. And I come back to like, maybe it's a woman, because I do think that you might be able to get a much better level, and somebody who's going to be much hungrier to prove themselves. So yeah. I would specifically like start looking and you know, what's her name? The ex assistant for the,
Becky Hammon.
Becky Hammon, who immediately went to the WNBA and started winning. Yep. Right. We're like, people talk shit about Becky, but Becky went to the WNBA. What'd she do? She immediately went to the fucking, did she win? I don't know if she went to the finals and won, but she went to the finals. Yeah. Right. So it's funny. It's like Bill Laimbeer. Like, why didn't the Pistons never hire Bill Laimbeer? Who went out, was like a legendary, you know, WNBA coach.
Yeah.
He was coaching. Because he was winning with the women. Yeah. He's fucking winning with the women. He's a legendary Pistons. Why didn't you just fucking bring him in?
Yeah.
He knows what the fuck he's doing. Yeah. I mean, don't be like, sometimes people overthink these things. It's like, you want somebody who's been successful. You want, and particularly if they've been successful in a startup league, which is what the WNBA was, and built a long-term organization. That's exactly the kind of guy you want to bring in. So, and he's within the tree, right? I mean, I just mentioned Bill Laimbeer. Well, what is Bill Laimbeer doing? Like, why not bring him in? At least as a consultant, he built a long-term successful program. Yeah. He is a Pistons legend. Why would you bring him in? So again, I'm getting into this, but like structurally, I think it makes, like, if you're trying to turn around a franchise, right? People like folk, they do these retreads, they do these rehires, failed other places. And really, that's not, I honestly haven't gone through it with Celtics. I thought what the Celtics did was really smart. They first brought in Danny. Danny was great. When they brought him in, he was kind of bringing, but they brought him in long term. Then they brought in Brad, and they brought in Brad long term. They found him, they brought him in, put his people in. And now they're like, you know, they could just pick somebody, like, you know, when their coach lost his mind or like revealed himself as it was, he could bring out an assistant who's actually really good, because organizationally they're strong. Their bench is really strong, right?
Yeah.
Their organizational bench is really strong. And this is the kind of thing that, like, you know, look at the Spurs. Spurs organizational bench also really strong. The Warriors are really strong. Like part of building, like, as much as I give shit to Kerr is a bad playoff coach, right?
Yeah.
He's a bad playoff coach. He's not good at the adjustments. He does get out coached in the playoffs. Kerr is a great CEO coach, right? Mm-hmm. He's really good at managing the team in season. He's really good at managing personality. He's really good at putting together a working staff that's successful and building an organization. Now, he has his flaws, but again, like, nobody can be a five-star guy like, say, Spo. But, like, you know, this is kind of what you do. You need to find a guy and then build a staff around. Like, who's the best assistant? Who's the best assistant on the Pistons right now?
So, so it is clear, Becky Hammon's first year as the coach, they finished first in Western Conference, and they won the championship in her first season coaching. So,
yeah, and I'm saying, hire Becky, right?
Yep. Yeah,
we
brought her up with, what was it, a couple years ago, I think, even, where we were like, why isn't she getting a shot? I think there was some bullshit and drama that was involved as to why she didn't. But it wasn't.
Well, she was getting whisper campaigns by, and it's the kind of people who are whisper campaigning against her. It's like, this is bullshit. You know, they're kind of, and again, it. But I mean, we've gotten into organization on the weeds. But like, I was like, who would you say is the best assistant on the Pistons? Is there an assistant on the Pistons you would hire as a coach?
I don't know that there's one that. Because Dwayne has been out a couple times, so there have been instances where it's not Tellum, he's a scouting guy. I'm blanking on who it is. But there was an assistant coach that came in. I don't remember what the record even was or how they played. I think he was kind of going back to, at the beginning, Dwayne's old rotations, and they weren't working. From what I remember, it's been a while. Second half, he shook things up and they played like better. But I don't know that anyone's like, he's the guy. Like, I don't know that we have that. There's been no talk about like this is the successor or anything. Yeah. Even with Dwayne's contract coming up.
I mean, the Celtics had their next coach on the bench. Darvin Ham has been really good for the Lakers with a mess of a roster.
Yep.
Was on the bench assistant for the Bucks, and there's other assistants like Phil Handy on the Lakers is really good. Apparently, Phil Handy does not want to be head coach. He's supposed to be like extremely fucking good. So, you know, it's telling, right? It's like you need to like hire guys and also hire guys who you would hire as a head coach.
Right.
At some point as part of the bench. So like, and same thing, like put guys who like know what they're doing in your D League slots. It's, I don't know. I mean, like I have my theory of how it works, and I kind of feel like some of these staffs are dumb because I'd be like, okay, so like find who are the best international coaches that I could bring in? Like who's the best coach in the Puerto Rican league? Does he speak English? Can I bring him in? Like bring some of these guys in to work my G League. Maybe they can stay, and I'd still let them work the San Juan League. Like, you know,
what's funny though, is that the Guaynabo Mets have an assistant coach from the Motor City Crews running the team this year. So
can I say, like, you know that Phil Jackson hung a banner for the Ponce Leones, right?
Oh yeah. Yep.
You know that Tex Avery also hung a banner for the Leones.
Yep.
Like there's a bunch of like these guys who've like worked on like international, like get these like guys who are like really good international coaches, bring them in during the season. They can go off the season. They can do scouting for you, create contacts. And so I think there's a lot of, like, if I was advising the Pistons, right, this is what I would tell them. Like, look, expand your, like, start thinking about, is this a guy, don't hire anyone who you would have coaching your organization. Like if you're hiring somebody as a coach, hire somebody you can see running your organization 10 years, right?
Yep.
Hire somebody who's hungry. Hire somebody who's at the top of their game. Look at classes where people haven't, like, hey, maybe get the tires on Becky. Maybe get the tires on, like, you know, hire maybe guys who've been successful. I mean, I mentioned Brett Laimbeer, but I don't know if Brett Laimbeer wants to do anything. Maybe he does. Or, like look for, you know, long-term continuity in the things that you're doing, because I don't think that that's what they did, right? And I've been pissing on the Pistons for a while, but I do think it's an interesting case where I'm looking at going, like, you know, they're not, it doesn't look like that particular rebuild's been successful. Like, this is like, say, like, Indiana. Indiana went out and hired, like, they went out and hired Rick Carlisle, right? Yep. And they went out and got Tyrese Halliburton, right? And just those two moves alone, basically, you know, if you've got Rick Carlisle, you let Rick Carlisle hire coaches and train those coaches up, there's a good chance, like, somebody on Rick Carlisle's bench is going to be a coach at some point somewhere, right?
Right.
And they've still got like a bunch of professional basketball players. They've developed some guys. Now they're not.
Still go back to with this Pistons team though. It still goes back to the roster. It's just not good. I mean, it's auditions. That's all. And if you watch them play, when they're playing well, it's usually because they picked up things on the defensive end a little bit and they got out in transition. The half court offense is terrible. And it's just, last episode we talked about it. It's a lot of just one-on-one ISO bullshit. And it's like, actually, it's hard to watch sometimes, man. It's just, they're out there literally playing for, am I going to get a slot? Am I going to hang in the league? And then can I be traded?
Did I mention that I thought like Casey basically was a system, not Casey. Yeah. Because like, if you think about it, it's Toronto teams. The Toronto team's played really good defense. But again, once he left, Nick Nurse, right? And the assistants there still have them playing incredibly good and smart defense. And I think that's like, I mean, Casey's a dinosaur, essentially. Casey is an old school kind of, and I don't think he's a guy who's adapted to the way you play defense in the modern NBA. The defenses in the NBA post the hand-checking rules, right, changed. And Thibodeau should get most of the credit for this, because effectively the way you have to play defense now is you have to play defense on a string, right? And we're going to get into defensive theory, but like this, I'm going to try to dumb it down for everybody so they can understand. So think about the basketball court. There's a string going from the hoop to the guy driving the ball at the hoop, right? Point guard's coming down, right? So there's a line between the hoop and that guy, right? And as a defense, you want to have somebody on the point of attack on the ball. You want to have somebody at the rim, and you need to have like a defender that basically floats in the middle of that line. And then your other two defenders are helping either at the bottom or at the top or at the three off that line. So essentially, think about it as a cross. There's a line between the ball and the hoop, and there's a line between that intersects that line that goes to the 3-point line. Effectively, you think about it, right? And if the team is if the offensive team is crashing towards the hoop, like if you have somebody like Kawhi or somebody like Draymond, like when Draymond, when he has somebody helping and covering the rim, he can crash into that, or somebody like Jason Tatum can crash into that or crash out, depending. Jaylen Brown, crash in and crash out. Around. Like really, it's like a seesaw. You're crashing in from the three-point line of that. And then like somebody like Chris Paul will be on the ball crashing down, or somebody like, you know, at the rim will be like somebody like Jared Allen or like Evan Mobley, right? Who's like at the ball to help. And again, like if you think about like a team, the reason why I like a team like Minnesota is they got Mike Conley now on the ball, right? And you've got Gobert playing at the hoop, and you've got Anthony Edwards freed up to roam, right? But you've also got like Slomo freed up to roam, right? And all Anthony Towns has to do is either help on a rebound, right? Or basically go out and put his hands up, he's 7 feet tall, and like, or like basically maybe like use his hands to like interfere with the passing, right? So is that a simple enough explanation, coach?
Yes, it is.
Yep. Does it make sense to you as a coach?
Yeah, and I think that's been one of the more perplexing things in watching the Pistons is there is no defensive philosophy. There just isn't. And so I couldn't tell you how many times that guys have just had wide open drive and dunks to the basket because there's no rotation, there's no help. And it's just, like I said, I think that they are...
But I mean,
Houston, San Antonio, and Detroit in that order... or flip San Antonio with Houston, whatever. But like they're just talent deficient, and so like when you're playing against the best players in the world, and your roster's full of guys that maybe shouldn't even be in the league. Like I would love to see some kind of a fucking scheme, like some kind of a plan, you know. And I see it during the games. I've sat right behind the bench at Pistons games. And they'll tell the players if what play is about to happen, you know, which way they should react, all those things. But that doesn't speak to an overall arching defensive philosophy. And like,
if you're watching like a top tier playoff game with elite teams, like say you're watching the Bucks will stay home on that line, like aggressively stay home on the line. Giannis is basically going to sit there. Middleton's going to float. Drew's going to play on the ball. And the other players are going to press on the three-point line. So effectively, the other two players are going to be pressing. You're talking about that. They're going to press on the three-point line.
Yep.
And they're going to try to get you to cut inside towards Middleton or Giannis. And what the offense is going to try to do is they're going to try to basically like run action. They're going to try to run action and get these guys to collapse up that line. This is when you see like, you know, one of these guys will help out and you'll see a guy come in on the back door and dunk the ball, right? Yep. Because the action was designed like, and again, this is like, so somebody can understand what like coaches are talking on that, like what really you're trying to get these people off the line. So effectively you're trying to put pressure on one side. Like you're trying to put a guy like KD on the wing, right? So that like Giannis will help, right? And then there'll be a hole for a cut on the other side, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The trick on this is if Giannis or Middleton are there, like even if you are making a pass on top, sometimes you're making the pass on top and Giannis is long enough where he can just knock it out of the fuck of the air. Yeah. But again, this is kind of the
Bruce
way.
Brown, like, this is where Bruce Brown lives, by the way. That's how this motherfucker makes his entire career, is that the back cut
PJ, for a dunk. PJ Tucker. Yeah. PJ Tucker. Yeah. But like, the trick on this is, right, so like, if you're watching your team, right, and you cannot see them staying home on that line, right, so if you're watching the teams on defense and they're not staying home on that line, unless they're pressing, right, which is the thing, you can't press, right? But if you're pressing, that means you're really fucking good, right? You have to be like really fucking good to press or play one man up or like do like a box in one zone. Like, fine. There are situations where like maybe I'm doing box in one, but like these are special situations and you have to be extremely good to do this. Effectively, if you cannot see your team staying home on that line consistently, your team has a bad defense, right? Yep. This is the best way. Like, if you're seeing the rim, like if you're seeing no opposition at the top of the ball, right? And you're seeing no help as somebody's driving from the top of the key to the rim, right? And you're seeing nobody home to catch that guy driving towards the rim at the hoop. Your team does not have a good defense, right? Yep. Basketball, like, and again, people think about, oh, look, like the five position. No, you have to think about like the ball and the hoop. And there really should be three players at home on that line, either on the ball, ready to catch the help defense on the back at the rim, and then somebody coming in to help disrupt, right? Because yeah. effectively, if you don't have that, like you could have the guy at the ball, you could have the guy at the ball, have the guy at the rim. And if there isn't that help guy, if your point guard is fast enough to beat the first guy, then he's basically operating open in the box. Just take it like a little. You can look at either take a bunny or basically it's somebody open, right? And maybe it's a situation where you don't respect the guy taking the hoop. It might be a situation, maybe worse for the driver. But again, you have to be really fucking good to do that kind of thing. Like okay. this is, and again, we've gotten into the weeds on this, but I think this is like, and I explained this before. The first time I think it's explained it on video or like on audio. And I think, again, watch the game and watch it like that. Think about it like that and visualize it like that. They started playing this way. I mean, really, this is once they went off way for that Celtics 08 team is really the first thing I started playing this specifically in mind, staying home on that. But that's because like once we went to like a more zone, like once you can play zone, you can do this, yep. right? As opposed to when, you know, back in the day, you couldn't. You have to play man. You really couldn't. Because if you're doing this, you're effectively sitting in a zone. So yeah. you'd get a whistle. Teams would do this, but they, like Chuck Daly teams, Pistons, as a defensive, Chuck Daly teams would do this, yeah. but they would get whistled for illegal defense on occasion. But yeah. you could see them doing this. Like Rodman would stay home. Like, basically, Rodman would either stay home at the rim or stay home and help. And Rodman was so fucking annoying. Yeah. I remember playing Celtics playing. I remember him like he would basically catch everything and help everything. And then Isaiah would be at the top, and then you'd have Lampier at the bottom, right? Yeah. And they would make it look like they were covering man, but shit, no, like
yeah,
you know what I mean.
I know. I'm well familiar with it. So Arturo,
but I mean, I think that was fun. I think that like MVP.
Yep,
you with Jokic.
I'm with Jokic. Yeah. Ryan the three-peat. Yeah, it's hard to argue against it. You know, he's incredible. His stats are fucking amazing. And they're the first place team in the West. And that's been the long standing, you know, barometer of are they a real candidate or not, right? Are they a fifth seed? Are they a first seed? First seed, and you're posting these kind of stats. Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious who you are the other day.
I think Tatum can top three, but I don't think Tatum can win. So I think, I think it's joking at this point.
Yeah, I think it has to be. And, you know, Giannis is, again, unbelievable. Again, generational talent, but so is Jokic as well. So it's, you know.
So it's going to be, what, Jokic, Giannis, Tatum, probably top three?
Yeah. And then maybe Durant and Luka, right? Those are probably top five.
I don't think that Luka's not going to win enough games. Durant's not going to play enough games.
Too much. Yeah. Injured Tatum. Yeah, too. I can see.
Okay, so this is
it feels like the top of the NBA kind of right now, where it's like it's Giannis or Jokic and Tatum and then kind of everyone else. But
yeah. So this is funny. You got me fired up talking about defense. That's good.
Hey, if you made it all the way through, thank you for listening. And be sure that if you're not subscribed, you do that, whether it's on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it. Also, be sure to leave a comment on YouTube, and if you're feeling generous, give me a 5-star rating on both Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll see you next episode.